Sup, y'all? Yeah. Hey, guys, it's Scott again. Welcome to another episode of the Verbal Shenanigans Podcast. We got a really fun one for you today, but I want to tell you about some of the sponsors we are blessed to work with here. We have a lot of cool sponsors, so let's talk about them real quick before we get to today's episode. Sleepovation is a mattress company that we just started working with that we could not be happier to be part of. Are you waking up with back pain? 50% of Americans are. Sleepovation's new mattress is 700 tiny mattresses that individually cradle natural curves of your spine. This provides perfect comfort and spine support for back pain relief and the best damn sleep of your life, man. It's just these individual mattresses that just contour to your back like they're just holding you like in a little cloud. So pre-order yours now at sleepovation.com. Use the show code VERBAL and get $100 off of your order. So go check out sleepovation.com and give them some love. Susan Robb is one of our sponsors along with Paul Templer, the hippo guy. The hippo tax survivor has been on our show twice. So him and Kim Ward, who was another guest on the show, have launched the Nepal Women's Outreach Program and really need your donations. Kim Ward, the executive director of the Templer Foundation, a nonprofit 501c3, has launched a GoFundMe page under the name Nepal Outreach Program. This program is designed to help specifically women and their children who are homeless. Their mission is to secure a house for the first 15 women and 17 kids and enroll each child in school this year. The first $3,500 raised goes toward tuition for the year for 17 kids so far in the program and supply women the materials and tools to help them sustain the sewing program the Templer Foundation has started. So go check out their GoFundMe page, the Nepal Outreach Program, and help them out. Susan gets a lot of guests for our show. She's just been present. She's just great to talk to. And she can set up all sorts of things for you with motivational speakers. So go help her out. It's a wonderful cause. So go check that out. Now, we are blessed to have three brewery sponsors on the show. One of them happens to be Manskirt Brewing. They just put their Berliner Weiss on tap, which is once, twice, Weiss, like German sour. They just brewed a speckled old ale, think old speckled hen, and will be doing their Wee Heavy again. Better Than Pants and the Great Porter are also both available in cans. And they're going to be at the Jersey City Brew Fest on the 18th. Two sessions at 1 o'clock and 6. Go check out JerseyCityBeerFest.com and also go check out our friends at Manskirt Brewing. Now, another brewery that we are lucky to work with is Demented Brewing in Middlesex, New Jersey. They just released Fiend, their English Mild with coffee on draft, and Osiris, their barley wine aged in rye whiskey barrels. This Sunday coming up, they're going to release Silent, their single hop Montueca IPA. They are just a really awesome brewery to go visit. They have one of the coolest tap rooms around and just really good people there. So go check out Demented Brewing. Now, up in the Adirondacks, my favorite area to visit, up in Lake George, you have the Adirondack Pub and Brewery, right there on Canada Street, right across the street from the lake. It's beautiful. Every Sunday in November, they got a Sunday brunch. Adirondack Pub and Brewery has developed a completely unique and absolutely insane brunch menu that they're excited to share with you. Greek toast, huevos rancheros, breakfast tacos, shrimp and grits, and much more. No brunch is complete without Bloody Marys and mimosas. You can expect a wide range of breakfast cocktails made with local spirits right alongside their beer. Brunch is first come, first served. More information on the brewery's Facebook page. And every Thursday night at 7 p.m., the Adirondack Brewery is hosting Trivia Night. So grab some friends, test out your knowledge, win prizes that include free yoga classes, growler fills, and more. So that's the Adirondack Brewery. Now, finally, Trivia Revolution, fueled by craft beer. I host every Wednesday at Tap House 15. You can find trivia all over the state of New Jersey in craft beer bars and breweries. Trivia Revolution, fueled by craft beer. All right, this week on the podcast, if you are a hockey fan, or just a fan of interesting stories, but specifically a New Jersey Devils fan like myself, we are talking to Arlette Roxburgh, who Arlette has become kind of like... almost like part of the team, like a team mascot. She sings the national anthem for them basically at every home game. Been with them for about 20 years, and she was just a real pleasure to talk to. Had a very interesting story. We also have an artist by the name of C. Duncan. His name is Chris, and he's blowing up all over the place. So a very fun episode. So with that, guys, enjoy the podcast.
Hey, everybody. This is Arlette. I am the official anthem singer of the New Jersey Devils hockey team. And you are listening to Verbal Shenanigans.
Hey, this is C. Duncan, and you're listening to Verbal Shenanigans. Her shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Hello, everybody.
Hi.
Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back, Michael Berlew.
It's a pleasure and an honor to meet you.
Yeah, don't sound too excited to be here.
Oh, it's a dream come true, and I'll be telling my grandkids about this day.
Well, you don't even have to tell them. You just send them the link. You know?
Oh, yeah. I forget. They'll be in the future. You know?
In the future.
Yeah.
Future kid. All right, so we are.
Grandpa, we don't use links anymore. We just put chips in her brain.
I know. Just blink it to me. Just blink twice. It'll be in my head.
Oh, you kids with your cyborg stuff. Back in my day, our computers were separate from us.
Izzy, can you help me over here?
I can't get the cyborg blink thing to work again.
But anyway.
Damn Terminators.
We are back. We just came off of, if you tuned in last week, we just came off of Trent Dilfer. Super Bowl winning quarterback. So,
3 knee surgery.
I know. The night before having his knee replaced, which I'm still thinking about that. I'm like, I remember my dad before he had his knee replaced. He was like a nervous wreck all day before, like a week before.
I kind of wish it happened after Trent Dilfer where we do like an experiment where we ask him wacky questions and see how he reacts to it.
So you mean like after he got out of the ER?
Yeah, like his surgery came after this experience with Trent Dilfer.
Yeah.
Everybody's like this when they get their knee replaced.
I thought you meant like interviewing Trent Dilfer like as he's coming out of the, you know, out of surgery.
Well, that'd be cool too. It'd be probably on a bunch of different stuff, you know. What did Ray Lewis do? What?
My dad was so messed up on the pain drugs the first time that he definitely was all looped up. And I remember him in the rehab room, like watching the TV, some car show, and he's like sweating and like real focused on it. He like told us afterwards that like he was watching and all of a sudden he thought he was in a car and that like cops were things were chasing him.
I wish he picked something up. You'll never take me alive, and just start chucking it at your family,
like a walker or something. But yeah, that was pretty intense surgery. I mean, Trent Dilfer is a lot younger than my father, so.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so that was quite an episode. Now you were just talking about before you got on the cast, like how you were. You know, last week we talked about your job search, and I guess today was the first day of no job, correct?
Yeah, I took it kind of easy today just because I had stuff lined up, but other than filing for unemployment.
You deserve to take an easy day.
Yeah, but people kept on calling me and bugging me and stuff, so, you know. It's,
leave me alone, Mom.
We got an interview and all. I don't care, it's my day off.
Call back tomorrow when I'm free.
But, yeah, I got a couple things lined up and setting up some different interviews, some in Jersey, some in different states, so who knows where I'll be.
You said you had one in Seattle?
Yeah, I'm getting it set up with a company in Seattle.
That kind gets us one step closer to Sean Kemp.
I know. That was the key. Wait a minute. Your name is Scott Brennan and you work for this company? Yeah.
If you move out, you have to be like a correspondent, like, well, checking in with Mike, like, live. Like, just your whole goal is just to, like, find him on the streets somewhere.
Scott, I got lost in Montana. I really can't find him right now. Really should have used that GPS stuff, you know?
Now, if you met Sean Kemp and he was like, look, the only way I'll do this interview with you is if you do this rail of cocaine with me, what would you do?
I guess the premise of my decision would be based off of, do I have a regular job or am I just like an interviewer?
Okay.
Like something
so
where...
Today. So it happens today. You're out for your interview, like going to visit, but you don't have a job yet.
Yeah. I go down to Seattle. Right. I do my interview. I step out. Oh, my God. It's Sean Kemp.
Right.
We go to a bar. He's like, you know, I'll talk to you, but, you know,
Like, he just puts a line on the bar. Yeah. He's got the microphone ready, but he says, I will not talk to you until you blow this line with me.
See, like, in this current position, no, because most of these places are kind of like, they want some pee before I get the job.
Okay.
Like, if... And I guess if I was a professional, I'd be kind of unprofessional of me. I had to get the interview, man. Haven't slept in 4 days.
Let me explain. All right.
I mean, I'm one of those when it comes to drugs. I've always been under the premise of, if you want to do it, do it. If you want to ruin your life, go ahead. Yep. You know, I'm not one of those. It's like, oh, but what about the children, this and that? It's like, if you're stupid enough to snort a line of cocaine, there's no rationale that I'm going to give you where you're going to stop doing it.
What if you had an interview with, you also saw Ray Rice in the same bar, and uh-huh. It was like, look, you have to jab my wife in the face before I do this interview.
That'd be an awkward situation there. I mean, did she say something to me beforehand that would entice me?
All right, so here's the scenario. You just finish your blow with Cam, got the interview, great interview, and then Ray Rice is sitting in the bar stool next to you. His wife's getting real lippy, and he's getting aggravated, but obviously he can't do anything about it. He's like, look, I'll give you the interview if...
I wouldn't promote it, but at the same time, I'm on coke, so I wouldn't be surprised if I ended up with the interview.
At this point, who really wants to interview Ray Rice anyway?
No teams are interviewing him, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah, he's done. Yeah. He's done. It had to happen like that next year, or no one cares about you after like 2 years off.
It's funny how like all the controversy with Kaepernick, how like some of these teams are signing third string quarterbacks who haven't been in the league in like 4 years. It's like, man, if you get to that, you're pretty screwed right now.
But then you think about how long Brett Favre hung around. Like every season for like 4 years after he retired, it was still like rumors like, oh, he's gonna come back and help the Vikings. He's gonna come back to the Bears. I feel like if you can throw a ball even in one game, like, you're in the minds of teams for the next two seasons.
Well, I mean, just from our last interview, like, Dilfer, he got a bad concussion in San Francisco. They pretty much told him, we're putting you on IR, save your life. So we pretty much know you're not coming back. So we're doing this for your benefit. And if it wasn't for a basketball game, he would have been in there with Jamarcus Russell. And Lord knows he would have been on the field with Jamarcus Russell down there.
All right, so you're still in the bar, right? You decline.
This is an amazing bar, by the way. I just want to start off by saying
you decline the Ray Rice interview, but you turn behind you.
Uh-huh.
And Louis C.K. is just sitting there just going to town. And he says,
on
you
himself.
Yeah. You can go. You can interview me, though, during this.
I mean, I guess tactically with the microphone, I'd just be looking at his face, so I wouldn't have to.
Sure you would.
I mean, there'd be like,
sure you would.
Be noises in the background, and be bad, little static and whatever.
I don't know, man. What do you feel on the whole thing? I feel like anybody in Hollywood just is a creep, I think. And no matter what you did, even if you did something weird, it's going to come out eventually.
Yeah, I think with pretty much any guy who had any power, there's some story out there where it's pretty much like, yeah, I told this person, oh, hey, come on over. And then after I got her over, you know, I did this. I gave her some drink. I put on some music, blah, blah, blah. And then it ends up to one of those stories 5 years ago. Let me explain.
Yeah. It's a bummer. Louis was a bummer. I'm like, oh, man. I'm like, not Louis.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised at all.
No. I mean, it's kind of a weird thing. I mean, on one side, you see all the other people are like, deny, like Harvey Weinstein, Bill Clinton, Bill Cosby, all of them, where there's like such a mountain of evidence. It's like, come on, dude.
Right.
And he, like, once it came out, he just pretty much put it out there. You know what? I'm an asshole. I did it.
Mm-hmm.
Here's my confession. And he still can kind of rip for it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there's the argument that, like, he asked beforehand, so he's not a big... I mean, he's a creep, obviously. But we kind of know he was a creep before it.
I mean, if you didn't know he was a professional comedian, if I just showed you a picture of his face, you'd probably say, hey, yeah, I don't want my daughter in the same room with this guy.
Yeah.
Let's be honest.
So, I mean, it's just a bummer because I just love Louis' comedy so much. It's just a bummer that, like, man, because he's not going to be around for a while.
No, I mean...
I feel like if there's a guy that can get out of it, though, and rebuild his reputation, I feel like he could figure out a funny, like, really honest way of doing that. I don't know how, but he's pretty open, usually.
I mean, I guess eventually time heals everything. I mean, we saw Michael Richards back on TV with Curb Your Enthusiasm, and he was literally making jokes about what he said. Mel Gibson, he's Daddy's repairing. Home too.
And, he's repairing.
Yeah, and it's all with time where it's you see him, it's like, oh, I haven't seen him in a while, and it's usually one friend has to come up, dude. It's like, what? Oh, yeah, he did that. Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Right now, somebody's going, this OJ dude is really cool. I like him.
He's fun.
Yeah. Where were you for the last 9 years of my life? God dang it. You're fun.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. It's just...
So does OJ walk into that same bar, by the way?
Yeah, why not? It's a cool bar. Cool, hippie
Scott,
Seattle
bar. You got to get out of here, man. Every damn celebrity's in here. Now, I got to tell you, they're doing weird stuff in here. But... the most awkward episode of Cheers.
OJ's just stabbing someone, but the interview is phenomenal.
All right, I'll hold your glove. Why not?
Hold this while I do this.
But seriously, what was it like in San Francisco, OJ? Final year, you know, you're trying to get into movies. Go on.
Yeah. I don't know, man. It's just the more and more comes out every day and another person. I feel bad for, like, there's probably some of those people that the stories are not true, and they're just kind of like everyone assumes them, and that's true at this point because of the wave of stuff that's coming out.
Yeah, I mean, well, think about it. One of the favorite people... I mean, not to mix words, on the left-hand side, it's George Akai.
Right.
And that just came out that apparently he drugged some guy and he was pulling down his pants. The guy woke up. He's trying to get his underwear off.
Well, yep.
What are you doing? And just relax. I don't want to do this. Well, you can drive home, but I wouldn't recommend it with a drug in your system.
You should take the Enterprise. It's by that door. Just lay in the bed.
Beam me to the bedroom.
But
I mean, in all seriousness, I mean, that's some serious allegations. What do you do? Like, it was almost like people cherish him.
I know.
He's 80, so that, I think the guy said it happened in 79, so it's quite a while ago. I mean, what do you sit back and say, I hate him, I like him, but I hate him? Stuff.
You ignore it. You just.
I mean, even Ben Affleck. There was a whole thing. Negan's real life wife.
Yep.
Said like he sexually harassed her, and even the guy who plays Negan is like, you know, she's playing it cool. I'm not going to overreact or whatever. But all that happened was Affleck said, "Yeah, I was an idiot. I'm sorry."
Yep.
And it's everybody's like, "Oh, it's okay." It's like, no, it's not okay. Batman sexually harassed somebody.
Well, it's Batman.
So Val Kilmer sexually assaults, let's say, Alex. You down with that?
Is it handsome and chiseled Val Kilmer or big fat slob Val Kilmer?
Well, he was chiseled at the time, but now he's current Val Kilmer.
Oh, no. if it's in the Batman suit, it's like, okay, no. Mm. But, you know. No, I'm just kidding.
So Adam West.
Yeah. Yeah. But I guess let's shift gears and start getting towards our first guest here.
All right.
So, I mean, hockey is... well, the Devils are on fire.
It's a sport.
Hockey is a sport on ice. The Devils are on fire, which makes me happy.
Mm-hmm. Flyers aren't doing half bad. Both of the teams were supposed to be, like, low-level, maybe 60 points the entire year.
And Devils are all babies. It's all kids. Basically, the whole team is kids, and they're playing out of their mind right now. They're in first place, and they're definitely come back to the pack eventually.
Yeah, around February, that's when you see if you got a real team or not.
Especially,
I mean, hell, the Golden Knights are one of the best teams in hockey right now.
Especially when you have young kids, they start to feel the impact of a whole season. Like, they start to slow down. But anyway, as of right now, the Devils are on fire. And it's been good for me because the Giants are terrible, obviously. The Mets were terrible. USA Soccer is terrible. Italy, by the way, not making the World Cup. Did you see that today?
I heard about it. Yeah, I mean, that's pretty shocking.
Don Bagnato is swinging from a noose right now.
The funny thing is, those three teams you just mentioned, we could probably interview all their head coaches since they all have nothing to do.
Yeah,
right
they have
now.
Nothing going on. So it's been like when I start to, like, I watched a little bit of it, tuned in here and there, I've been following it a little bit just because Devils are good again. It's kind of exciting. Went to the game the other day. It was a really good game.
It brings back good memories for me because I've mentioned this before, but when all through my childhood, I went to hockey games with my grandmother. It was like me, my grandma, my brother, sometimes my dad, but a lot of times it was with my grandma, which is kind of strange. You hear that, you're like, okay.
Medea goes to a hockey game.
My grandma was not a sassy black woman, but no? But
that'd be a great story.
But when the Devils are good, it just reminds me of, like, my whole childhood was like, I really paid attention to the Devils. Like, from when they won that championship, I was so invested in that team. Like, mm-hmm. I can't think of many other teams that I was so, like, knew everything about, and they won it all.
Hmm.
I remember clearly the 94 season when the Rangers won in that double overtime game or whatever it was.
Against the Canucks?
No, against the Devils to get in.
Oh, okay.
That Matteau goal. Just being, like, devastated. And then the next year, the Devils turned out to win. But I used to cut out, like, every week the News Tribune would do, like, different players on the team. Like, their profiles, I'd cut them out and put them all over my door and my room and stuff like that. Just very, like, back then that was my thing, was, like, hockey. Hmm. I went through phases. Like, the Mets have always been, like, I kind of paid attention to them the most. The hockey kind of went, and then it went away, and then back. And then it kind of comes and goes, but... football was always probably like third for me, which is interesting. But
well, the Giants, it's always, you never go into a season saying, ah, we got this. It's yeah. always like, oh, you suck. How the hell will you pull that off?
But even just like for me personally, like when baseball is good to me, I love watching baseball. Like when it's good. It was yeah. not good this year. It was unwatchable for the Mets this year. But it brings me back to like all these like nostalgic memories and stuff like that. And it's like, so it's like good. The Devils. Now, reason I'm bringing up hockey is because the guest we have coming on, her name is Arlette, and somewhere along the line she became kind of like a, I don't want to say hero because she's not a player, but like a almost like the Devil's good luck charm. She sings the yeah. national anthem, and it's funny because you go to games and you'll. If she's not singing that night, you hear people like, where's Arlette? Like, before the thing. And
Grandma, calm down.
Grandma, relax.
My D ain't going to have any of that.
Yeah, so it's become this, like, she's like the Devil's good luck charm. And I kind of, like, remember it happening, but I want to hear the story from her perspective, like, mm-hmm. how this all kind of took off and how she kind of became, like, almost like the house singer. Like she probably does like 20, 25 games a year on the national anthem. And I know she's also an independent artist. She does music and stuff too, but I'm very interested to hear that. And then I think we should talk to her. And then after that, check
That's
out.
That's a good thing to do on a podcast.
Yeah.
Talk to people.
It's kind of, I'm thinking about like maybe not doing that anymore.
Yeah.
And just calling people in awkward silence.
Yeah. Just them for 20 minutes. Hello.
Hello. And hello? Then just every once in a while we'll be like, hey, I was just wondering. And it's like, let it drop out.
Let's call back that sleep deprivation guy.
That guy sucked. but so I guess let's so after that we'll listen to Arlette and then we'll listen to some other great examples of
attempts.
The Star Spangled Banner.
Yeah.
Do you like any of your teams have someone like that you know of that's like a side piece like a
a side check.
Around the team, a mask or a fan that people know. Like I think of like the Jets had Fireman Ed for a while, and he's been like banished from the Jets. But
let's see, with the Sixers, what was the owner of the team? He was nuts. He like propelled from the ceiling, and he was nuts. But that was when we started getting Pat Croce. I want to say Pat Croce.
I don't know, but now you know who to look for this week. <for that. laughs>
But he was one that it was kind of cool because, you know, like Philadelphia is a football town. Like, yep. I mean, brutally honest, if you pulled like 1,000 Philadelphia fans, it's like, all right, only one of your teams is ever going to win from now on. Everybody would say Eagles. Mm-hmm. I mean, love the Philly Sixers, Flyers, but they're a football town. But Pat Croce, he kind of came in when they were bad before this last version of bad. And he was just a cool guy. He hang out. He was into like different health stuff and whatever, and he was just fun with it. And on like, I remember like the draft night when they got Iverson. Like you're never supposed to show your cards beforehand, right. But like, you know, they packed into the Spectrum at the time, and Croce's there, and he's like, hey, everybody, you know, thank you for coming out. We're looking forward to the future, blah blah blah. And he looks both sides. He's like, all right, don't tell anybody. He lifts up an Iverson jersey and the place went berserk. And
yeah, it's funny how like things take on a life of their own. Like, she's interesting because, if I'm not mistaken, she was found on the streets by Lou Lamoriello, like singing.
I read something like that, yeah.
So she should be interesting. So let's give Arlette, let me just make sure her last name is correct, Arlette Roxburgh a call. This one's for Devils fans out there. This one's for the fans out there listening live.
Scott, I got word from the Rangers fans. We still haven't done anything for them yet. any comment?
Won't be happening soon. I'm a liar. I'll sell out.
Hello.
Hey, is this Arlette?
Yes, it is. Is this Scott?
The Arlette, this is Scott and my cohort here, Mike Berlew. Thanks for giving us a few minutes here.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Arlette. How's it going?
I'm doing real good. Thank you. Yourself?
I'm doing all right. Well, I'm a Flyers fan.
Arlette,
so
I was going
to
say.
I'm going to be very mean to you. No.
He's a Flyers fan. Why is he even here?
I don't know. Honestly,
Scott asked me that every
week. I
asked
me that weekly. Like, I don't really know.
You really should change the combination lock to your house.
Arlette, you know how, like, you when you work with people, there's always just someone that you don't like at the office, but they kind of just find their way? That's Mike.
I know. It happens. All right, so we'll just put up with Mike just for, you know, for now.
She knows the motto of the show. Verbal shenanigans. We put up with Mike. Arlette, thank you so much for giving us a few minutes. I was saying before this, I grew up a diehard, still diehard Devils fan, but I grew up diehard Devils fan. And actually went to games with my grandmother. She was the one who was really into hockey.
Grandma, yay!
Yeah, which was interesting. But I remember we went to a lot of games, and during these like 94, 95, 96 times, suddenly Arlette became like a known name in the stadium. All of a sudden people started screaming for Arlette, or if someone if you weren't singing the national anthem that day, people would be like, where's Arlette? First off, how did this all start? I know I read something about Lou finding you, but can you tell people how this happened?
Yes. So back in maybe in the late 90s, Lou used to come to this restaurant where me and my then husband used to sing. It was on Second Avenue. And he used to, he would just be walking by. I remember one night he was walking by with his friends, they had dinner up the street. And that restaurant where I was singing, the doors were open and we were just sitting there and we were singing, you know, right by the doors, and people were hearing the music as we were passing by. So him and his friends, they came in. Lou Lamoriello, he and his friends came in and they just, you know, had a drink. They were listening to the music and, you know, they started to come back once in a while and we became friends. So one day he says to me, he's like, Arlette, you know, I'm involved with this team. This is how he puts it.
Yep.
And I was wondering if maybe you want to come and sing the anthem. You know, it's a hockey team. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that sounds cool. You know, I have no idea about hockey. I'm from Trinidad. So I was like, okay, yeah, sure. You know, we didn't have, you know, ice hockey in Trinidad. So I I'm like, okay. So he sends a limo for us. Me and my husband went. And, you know, I get there and then I realize who this gentleman really was. You know, he was like Lou. He was like the man.
Well, he is. Oh, he is.
God. Yeah. So, and then, you know, I started to sing the anthem, you know, and they would have me sing, you know, back again. And then, you know, the popularity kind of grew. And then they asked me, would I like to be, you know, the official anthem singer for the Devils? And I was like, yes. So, and then, of course, I became myself a huge hockey fan, a huge Devils fan. I mean, diehard, right there with you, Scott, you know. And yeah, so that's basically how it all started.
Now, why do you think the fans adore you? Let's put it the way it is.
That's sweet.
The fans adore you, and for some reason they identify with you. Why do you think is it just your talent singing? Did you have something? What do you think you brought to the fans?
I think it's a couple of things. I think, you know, like when you have like a really comfy old shoe that you just always have this shoe around and you'll miss the shoe if it's not there. But it's just like this comfy old shoe. That's what I am. You know, I've been there since the start.
That's the name of your new album, right? Comfy old shoe.
No, my comfy old shoe. No, I've been there since, you know, the start of like when I started to sing. I mean, the Devils were at their prime. You know, I came in, I was two Stanley Cups. I was like right there. I was down in center ice celebrating, you know, 2000 and then in 2003, mm-hmm. you know, so I kind of, fans kind of identified me with that time, you know, right. that when that glory days and, you know, just been, and then when we were over in the Meadowlands and we moved over to Newark, you know, right. everyone was so excited when I came there too, because it's familiar. It's like, you know, it kind of made it home. Right. You know, so I think it's a combination of things. And then when I sing the anthem as well, I mean, I sing it from my heart. I sing it straight. I don't make it all fancy and fluffy.
Yep.
You know, I sing it as I feel it's meant to be. I sing it very respectfully. And I sing it from my heart. You know, I'm coming. I am, you know, the representation of what it means to, you know, the American dream. I am that. You know, I came here from Trinidad. And, mm-hmm. you know, I planted my roots here. I fell in love with this country. I planted my roots here. I started my family here. You know, and my kids are American. And, I mean, I'm feeling this when I'm singing it. You know?
Right.
This is, I'm feeling this every time. For the 3,000 times I'm saying it, you know, 3,001 times, 3,001st time, I'm going to be, you know, feeling it just the same. So I think it's a combination of things, you know, why the fans relate. And I relate to them. I love my fans as well. Love the Devils fans as well.
So when a game's happening, how early do you get to the rink and how much do you warm yourself up before going out there and singing the anthem?
And actually, tell us about the first time you did that, too, and how it changed since you've done it 3,000 times.
Right. Well, the first time, of course, I was a little more nervous. You know, you're coming out onto the ice and there are 20,000 people, you know, there. So it was different. Now, you know, I'm kind of used to it, sure. I am the complete anti-diva. I do not do anything. I have my coffee with my cream. People are like, oh, Arlette, is that tea with honey? I'm like, no, it's coffee.
Love it.
And it has cream in it. You know, I'm just like, and I don't have... The only routine I have to get there, well, I'm supposed to get there an hour and a half before. Doesn't always work out that way, and we'll just leave it as that. But I get there in time, you know, because I don't even do the whole sound check thing and everything. I trust everyone. Everyone knows me. Everyone knows my levels. So, you know, I get there, and I get something to eat. I get something, you know, stuff my face in the lounge, and then I get my coffee.
Yes.
And but you know what it is? I'm a singer I'm a working singer, so right. I'm kind of like always warm. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't have to sit there and go, me, me, you know, la, la, la. Or maybe I should. Maybe I should do that. No, I'm thinking I will. I haven't needed to before. So yeah, I mean, I one thing I do need to do is like just before I actually walk onto the ice, yeah, I need to not be chatting with everyone and like I need to be focusing because sometimes, you know, I'm there waving and I'm chatting and then, and here is our letter. I'm like, oh my God! You know, and then I bug out. But once I am, because, you know, you still have the butterflies, you still have that feeling of right. when you're going out there and, you know, and now it's like you're going out there and everyone's saying, oh, that. You
yeah.
know, now it's just like, no, you know, and you feel the love in the room and you feel the responsibility of what you're going to do. And, you know, so it's all that. It's all these good things. But yeah, I'm so used to it and comfortable with it that I don't have much of a routine anymore. I've recently started doing it, working together with the organist. I used to sing it just a cappella,
mm-hmm.
and now I'm singing with the organist, and it kind of added a little kick to it, so that's fun as well. So yeah, we're doing different things.
Now tell me about your singing. Are you like a trained singer? Were you singing since you were just a kid for fun? And like, I know you
right.
do other things obviously on the side. You're not just
yes.
living off
yes.
singing the national
yes.
anthem. But
no,
did you grow up singing? And then all of a sudden, one of the top executives yeah. in the NHL just says, "Hey, that girl's good." Like, you had to be singing
yeah.
before this for quite a while.
I think like most singers' stories, we grew up singing in the church. you know what I mean? Or most, you know, black singers, at least, you know, we grew up singing in the church. Mm-hmm. And then we, you know, then you kind of find your voice. You're like, oh, I have a voice. You know, right. You find yourself. And then, well, actually for me, I mean, I came to New York from Trinidad. I came to New York to study, actually. So I, when I came here, I went to LIU. In Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. I was a chemistry major. I'm a chemist, by the way. I don't know what I'm doing with that. I'm a singing chemist. But I came in, I studied chemistry. I got my degree. But while I was there, I started to work with this wedding band. Ooh, I started to work with this Italian wedding band. Mm. Emozioni. Yeah, go figure. It's the weirdest thing. I started to work with that band just to make some extra money. You know, and so I really started to kind of do the whole New York scene. You know, we would do a lot of different weddings and stuff, and then I met my husband on one of these gigs, and he was looking for a singer to work with, so we started to do a duo. So we had this duo. It was Luigi and Arlette. You know, he was Italian as well.
No.
So,
Luigi?
No, Luigi.
I thought he was French.
I know. What gave it away?
Well, they're a bunch of depressed people after what happened in the World Cup today. So.
Yes.
Oh, God. Well, yeah. Well, no. I don't even think he cares, but. But anyway, I'm sorry. So we started as a duo and we were singing. And that's what we did for, you know, the better part of, you know, the past 20 years. And then recently, you know, we're no longer a couple, and I work solo and mm-hmm. I do my different things. And yeah, so it's a great story, but this is what I do for a living.
Right.
I sing. And I do the whole, you know, lounges and restaurants. I do parties and, you know, I do my own stuff as well. You can always, can I make a little plug here for my website?
Of course.
Stingarletsing.com. you can just check out, see what I'm doing, and you know, just find out, say hi, a little bit about me.
Right.
And listen, Scott, go follow me on Instagram.
I will.
I just started my Instagram account. I have like 3 followers. Even though you're a Flyers fan.
No, that's mine.
I am going to rag on you so much, you know. Nice picture. Not for a winner, but still.
I am so not even believing you right now.
don't listen to him. Just don't listen. Tune him out.
I won't.
Wait till the Flyers come to New Jersey. Oh, you get a ticket. I'm going to be banging on the windows while she's singing.
During the national anthem.
Don't miss a note.
You're really fighting that Philadelphia stereotype right now. Yeah, banging on the glass.
We're kind people, you know.
God, I know you have my back when he comes. I know you'll have my back.
I think there'll be a few on your back, least, as they tackle me.
I think I'll be all right.
Now, let me ask you, I mean, obviously you came in with the Devils getting to their heights and winning the Stanley Cup. Do you feel difference when you're singing for like a mid-season game versus the playoffs and the Stanley Cup?
Well, there's nothing like the playoffs.
Nothing.
I mean, playoffs are, I mean, the energy is insane. And, you know, the Devils, they're so great. Like, I've noticed other teams, like when the teams get in the playoffs, they get these celebrity singers and they do other things. They always just keep their Arlette, which is great. So get to do the playoff games, you know. So that's like an amazing energy. I mean, the Stanley Cup game where we won, that nothing could trump that. That was insane. You know, just the whole energy, the vibe of that. Yeah, it's definitely mid-season. You know, actually, the opening is like great, and then mid-season is, you know, mid-season, but playoffs, which we have not had for a while. And we're very... How exciting is it to be a Devils fan right now?
Oh, my God. We were just talking about this before this. Mm. They look amazing so far. Knock on wood. But.
Yes. We're looking... We're cautiously optimistic and really excited, actually. These guys are playing so good. These kids are just like...
Yep.
They're just killing it, you know?
Fast, hustling, hungry.
And, yes, hungry and that. Mm. And it really shows, you know? And boy, are we hungry too, our Devils fans.
Oh, yeah.
We have not had...
No,
yeah, we haven't had it this good for a while.
You came from Trinidad, obviously.
Yeah.
You were saying before, hockey is... I might be wrong here, but I can't imagine hockey is a big time prime time sport in Trinidad.
Well, no, because the ice would melt.
Yeah,
it's an island, the Caribbean island.
So that's my pitch for Cool Runnings too, by the way.
Oh yeah,
Trinidad hockey team.
So you come over, Lou Lamoriello, arguably one of the greatest executives in the NHL, picks you up, and you start getting in. Like, I'm guessing you're singing, you're not into hockey at the point. When does it start to grip you? Do you, like, is it after you start to, you know, you sing and then you sit in the crowd and watch the games? Are you starting to warm up to it? And you sound obviously now like you're diehard and all in.
Oh, forget it. I'm all in. But I was, yeah, I mean, I've been, well, first of all, I've been, this is 2 decades now that I've been doing this.
Right.
You know, so, but, and yeah, as long as I can, if I don't have a gig afterwards, I would, you know, sing the anthem and stay for the game, absolutely, as well. But, you know, the first time, the first few games that I saw, I mean, first of all, I was horrified because they used to fight so much. I was like, oh my God, why are they fighting? And then, like, it was dropping gloves. Then, of course, you get into it. You go like, yeah, yeah, you know, what it's like. After a while, you know, you realize that it's all part of it. Now I'm kind of missing it. It doesn't happen much. And I'm kind of, yeah, you know, that's like, it's exciting. You know what I mean? So it grew on me, but pretty fast, because I think hockey is such a great sport.
Especially live.
You know,
live.
It's great.
Especially live.
Yep. Yeah. I think that's what it is. When you're there, it's yeah, I don't like to watch it so much on TV, but when you're there, man, oh, that's just so awesome, you know? So, yeah, so I guess I fell in love with it, because if you're there, how can you not? I don't trust anyone who doesn't like hockey. If you go to a game, I don't trust you. I'm sorry, something's wrong. I'm joking.
Now, I wanted to follow this question up. So you're a great example of, you know, like, hockey is a sport that's trying to spread into more urban areas and to get African-Americans involved. And you're starting to see more and more African-Americans play on teams and whatnot.
Yes.
You can almost be, it's good to hear from you, because it's almost like you're like an ambassador to that. Like, you are an African-American woman who's very into hockey. Do you see the NHL doing a good job of trying to grow the game to minorities and to urban areas, or do you think it could be better?
Well, I'm not sure how to answer that. I mean, in Newark, Newark is there are a lot of urban areas, and so I see just by them being there, I do see a change in you know the people that come to the game. So that's, you know, if that's any indication of it, but I have no idea. I can't say I can't say for sure. You know, I guess that, you know, the people primarily the African Americans, they have not been in hockey, you know, in the sport as much. You know, they're not in these in the areas that, first of all, I mean, like, I was trying to get my son into the ice hockey and stuff like that, and I do realize that it is an expensive sport.
Very,
you know,
expensive.
And you know, and it's time consuming, and it's, you know, it's difficult to kind of get your kids into it, you know. A lot of needs to be done for that to, you know, be able to spread. You know what I mean? Yeah, we're not there yet at all, you know.
Now, when they've won the titles, have they brought you in for, like, the parades, or did you get a day with the Stanley Cup like the players do? Do you get any of that cool stuff?
I do. I have my pictures with the Stanley Cup. I performed at the parades. Yes, I was really a part of it. Yeah, when they had the parade at the first, both times I performed at the parade. Yes. It was awesome. It was awesome to be a fan, and I can't wait for that to happen again, you know. Getting my songs ready.
Yeah, it won't.
What
it won't.
What?
It won't. This is coming from the guy who hasn't seen a championship
since 75. We're due, so in your face, Scott.
You know, but when I first started this interview, you said to ignore him, so I'll just continue to do that.
Yes.
Okay, good.
Scott, really, stop telling the guests that.
Mike, I have the volume control over here on your microphone. Let me ask you, did you ever have like a unique relationship with any of the players, like a fun relationship? Did they get to know you? Like, do you start to know them, or are they kind of separate from what you're involved in?
Well, I mean, I'm down in the area where they're walking by. You know, so
they don't give you like a fist bump or anything before.
Yeah, they fist bump my kids. Yeah. They think it's fist bump my kids. Oh, you know, they give pucks to my kids. It's cute. Dare I say the older guys? I shouldn't say the older guys, but, like, you know, when there was Patrick Elias and Scott Stevens and Ken Danico, I was Martin Brodeur. I was more friends. We didn't go hang out for beer, but we didn't go out for beer together. But, you know, I was more but then it started. You know, I found the players changed so often. It's kind of hard to you know, but they were there for a while. Yeah, and, yeah. You know,
I mean, and that those Devils teams kept that core together for mm-hmm. a long, long time.
Yeah,
much longer than
is.
Most teams ever exactly. do it anymore.
Yeah, so that,
I mean, you
special.
Saw the same 8 to 10 guys for like
yes.
10 years straight almost mm-hmm. with that team.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, exactly. So, you know, even now if I see Marty, we just hug like old friends, you know, because it's just, you know, just memories of what it used to be and, you know, just the whole thing. So, yeah, and for that team of that era, yes. The young kids now, I mean, I did a photo shoot with Kyle Palmieri for just, you know, like a advertisement, advertising. So Kyle Palmieri, yeah, we, you know, but it's, we, I don't have like friendships or relationships right. with, yeah, any of them. They're all young kids. Hmm. I'm an old woman.
Oh, stop it. Now, you performed so many times. I mean, you're talking about thousands upon thousands of times. Have you ever had your voice crack or flub a line or something where you go, uh-oh?
I've never, no, flub the line, no. Voice crack?
The Philadelphia singers
I'm
would.
I'm sure it's happened. Like nothing that like, you know, to, oh my God, you know, go viral or anything. Like,
but, that's probably got to be the worst, the worst nightmare, like messing up and being on ESPN a mm-hmm. thousand times.
Yeah. And it happens so often with these singers. You know what I mean?
You don't want to be
these
a Carl Lewis video.
Oh, I know that. And then, you know, there was this, they forget the lines. They're like, oh no. But you know what? I kind of, in my performances and stuff, I kind of have a photographic memory, so I'm really good with lyrics. So, you know, I people always ask, oh my God, Arlette, how do you remember all the words to all these songs? So I kind of have the edge on that, where I have this photographic memory. If I look at the lyrics while I'm singing it for like 3 or 4 times, I learn the song. So I'm not going to ever forget the words to the Star Spangled Banner, but the voice crack, yeah, that can happen because, you know, stuff happens.
Yeah.
You know?
Arlette, before we get out of here, what kinds of things are you working on now, and how often are you over at the Prudential Center singing? And, like, you know, if people, they're going to game and hear this and they're like, oh, maybe we'll hear that girl from Trouble Shenanigans. What are you working on now, and how often are you there?
Okay, I'm there for pretty much every home game. Pretty much every home game,
that's
I sing
awesome.
The anthem. Yeah, it's very cool. A couple of nights off, but usually I'm there.
And when you're not there, we're not happy. Like, I've been to many games where you're not there, and everyone's like, oh, and you hear like random
Arlette. People say the energy kind of goes down.
It does.
It's the weirdest thing. I say, well, I don't know because I'm not there when I'm not there.
Very funny. She's just like hanging on the back. No, you can go do it. I'm good.
Right. So I, but from what I hear, yeah, that's interesting. But as I said, you know, it's just it's a familiarity thing, and you know, just oh God, I lost my train of thought.
What are you working on? That was the other.
What am I working on? Oh, working on my life. Yeah, I'm still, you know, doing that, singing, you know, here, there, and everywhere. And right now I'm working on my original stuff again. A few years ago, I had done a push for some of my original stuff. And then did a little thing, made some waves, and then I kind of went back again, came back again inside. Now I'm going to go back out again. So I would like to suggest that people just, you know, visit my website and see what's going on with me and just say hi, maybe sign up to know what's going on, you know, sign up on my contact list and stuff. And yeah, just to keep for the future, because there's a lot of stuff that's going to be happening in the future. It's not happening yet, though, but in the future, definitely.
Last question. Since considering how good the Nets are right now, are you glad they're in Brooklyn where you don't have to perform with them anymore?
Probably lost half her work.
Should I even answer? Oh God, the Nets! My run singing with the Nets was absolutely great, and it's absolutely over. And next question.
You don't got to be nice with the Nets. You know what? Screw them. They had a perfect opportunity to be Jersey's other team, and they left. And forget them.
I know.
Just a bunch of choke artists. That let them go away. I don't care.
We all make mistakes.
Yes.
You know, we all make mistakes. That was their mistake. You know, we wish them well.
You're too nice. you're too nice. But Arlette, where should people go to check you out? Where should they follow you?
Well, as I said, check singarletsing.com. Mm-hmm. Go to my Instagram account. Singarletsing is my Instagram name. YouTube as well. Just look me up and just hit me up and see what's going on with me. And definitely come to the games. You know, it's an exciting time to be a Devils fan. And I don't know about the Flyers, but I know that the Devils fans are doing. We're really happy right now.
We're doing pretty decent. I think both of us got lucked out in the draft, picked up a good player. And
Flyers fans are never actually happy. They're just, you know.
Right.
And they're waiting for the next thing to throw, things on the ice for. That's what they're there for.
That's so sad. Sad. Never really had. That's sad.
I love you, Arlette. Arlette, thanks so much for giving us some time on the podcast. And good luck with everything you got going on. And obviously, go Devils.
Thank you so much. It was nice meeting you, Scott. Oh, Mike, it was nice meeting you, too.
Oh, Scott, that's something that's never happened in Philly. Rudeness. Come on.
Oh, man, I love that she just, roasted you.
Yeah, what the hell, man? I'm such a nice guy, you know?
No, she's such a nice girl. You're just a piece of crap.
Yeah, I did do that line with Sean Kemp beforehand, so totally understandable.
Yeah, I love it. I love hearing, stories like that just come out of nowhere and, just take on a life of its own. Mm-hmm. But Arlette, that's definitely one that, there's little niche audiences that we'll find, and people are like, oh, it's Arlette.
Yeah. You know,
so, on that same note, why don't we take a listen to some of these National Anthem performances?
Yeah.
Obviously not the whole things, but... So we have a couple of here. I think the most famous that I know is either the Roseanne one or Carl Lewis.
Yeah, they're infamous.
So let's take a listen to Carl Lewis first. You hear that note, you're like, all right, not bad so far. You know, I'm okay. Maybe Carl's got something here.
He tried to have a music career. I mean, that was one of the setups.
Oh, say, can you see?
All right, first line, you're like, okay, all right, Carl, we'll get through this. We'll get through this, Carl. And then you hear this little voice crack right here.
Uh-oh.
I'll make up for it now.
No, he didn't.
The land of the free.
The best was when they showed Barkley, he had to put his jersey over his mouth because he was
Coleman
laughing
too,
his
right? I think it's one of them is Derek Coleman. Yeah, there's more to that, but go listen to that one. It's horrible. And if you're a sports fan, you've probably heard it before. That's not the national anthem. All right. Then we'll go to Roseanne, who just was trying to be obnoxious. Who would approve of Roseanne doing it? That's the real question.
Yeah. Well, it's the Padres. Nobody's there anyway, so.
No.
Oh. Right now?
Just a sound.
Oh, say, can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight o'er the ramparts we watched what so gallantly streaming.
It's hard to, even hear in the headphones.
That's the most noise from a San Diego crowd ever.
If this happened today, it would be the news story for the next 20 weeks with all the kneeling stuff going on. I'd be like, blah, 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 disrespect to the anthem, forever.
That person she asked, can I start now? Should have been the same person who was like, stop, no, not working. Hum it.
I feel like in 1990, they would boo her. They played once or twice on ESPN, and that would be the end of it. We wouldn't make gigantic issues out of it.
Mm-hmm.
It can't even get through that one. All right, so you sent me one, Ezra Harris. I don't know who this is, but let's take a listen to Ezra Harris.
All right.
Oh, see,
he's a cop and a dude.
Yeah.
All right. All right. Tennessee.
You see, by the dawn's early light, was so hell as my light at the last gleaming.
The last one.
Christ.
Hold on, I gotta go back here for a second. I gotta go back here.
The last gleaming right. Who brought the us fight?
Oh, yeah, there's like a picture of a cop staring at him like, oh my God.
Dreaming, and the rock is red.
He's doing the different melodies. He said the wrong word.
Gave through the night that the star.
I love the people like still trying to be reverent and like, yeah, closing their eyes. And
he's a hero, but still.
Jesus. No. Who let him up there?
It was some cop event, and I mean, him being a police officer, it's like, oh, let's have one of our own sing.
We should definitely have like a, we should each sing the national anthem, like just one take, mm-hmm, and then put it up online and see who, have people vote on which national anthem is better. One take, no words in front of you. Not allowed to have words in front of you. You just have to sing it like and own it, mm-hmm, and just try to go for it. And we should do that.
All right.
You can record a solo if you want, but you get one. You get one take.
Yeah.
And however it comes out, it comes out.
Exactly. No,
you have like a week to practice, and that's it. That might have to happen. All right. And then you sent me one, Alexis Normand.
Mm. So I'm guessing, yeah, I don't know what every person is, but it's like when I looked up bad.
Oh, yeah. Eventually.
Shoots, scores. Multitasking during the game tonight. Ask the panel, tweet your question to us.
About 20 seconds in.
Hashtag SN Memorial Cup, and we'll pick one lucky question. And
I guess that's her shooting.
No, that's just like the preempt to them showing the national anthem.
It's going to be hard to beat that last one.
Move your headwear and join tonight's honor guard representing the Korea Veterans Association of Canada and the Canadian Peacekeepers and Alexis Normand in the singing of the Star Spangled Banner and O Canada.
Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light?
Okay, right there, we're okay.
Yep.
A little flubberish, but you're not like booing.
Nothing terrible.
You're not booing.
What so proudly we hailed at the twilight's first gleam.
Well, first, last.
Broad stripes and
some gleaming.
Stars through the perilous.
Now she's doing it.
She is singing the way I sing every song. Because I don't know the lyrics to any songs. Even the songs that I've loved since I was a kid, I'm like, I just insert syllables in there. She's doing, oh, there he is, injecting his syllables. Wherever we do the podcast next, we got to get a doggy door. Oh, the pity cheer. Like, come on, you can do it. Oh, God.
You got that one, right?
Oh, the sarcastic hockey cheers. Yay!
And the man was still there. Oh, say does that
everyone's supporting her and singing. You go home and you just pour a stiff bourbon.
Like, oh, yeah.
Oh, this is going to be everywhere. Hey, hi, hoy, hi, hoy, hi.
She mixed up lyrics. She just hummed other lyrics. Yeah. It was.
She's.
That's up. It's one of people. She must be Canadian where it's like, I don't sing this every day.
It's pretty bad.
Yeah. I forgot to send you one. There was a Canadian girl. She went out. She started it. Forgot the lyrics. Walked out. Grabbed the notes. Came back. Started doing it again. Froze. Went out. Came back. As she came out, she took a step, flipped on the ice, and then walked right back and stopped.
I think I've seen that before. I think the guy, the cop, is the worst.
Cop is
in uniform in front of a bunch of other cops, just eating it. That's like, listen, bombing in comedy is bad, but bombing the national anthem in front of all your cop buddies, that's never going away. The best comics bomb every day as a singer. Like,
I guess the only close thing in comedy I would say is bombing, and then you start thinking, I'll make some stuff up on the flash, and it's like 1,000 times worse where you're just like,
Yeah, the last girl was getting the pity cheers, like, come on, you can do it. Yeah. Like, you got to be like, worked through it. It's bad, man. But I think the cop takes it. Roseanne was just trying to be obnoxious, so like it was really bad.
She knew she was bad, and unfortunately she didn't do anything to change
it. Carl's bad. The best is that he's like, I'm gonna make up for it now. I'm gonna do it right. Like,
I love your Carl Lewis imitation, by the way. Spot on.
It sounds just like the Hackle Head. Really, George Jenkins, that one. That guy definitely takes the cake.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a couple things this weekend that I were interesting.
Okay.
So the first thing I did, I remember I mentioned it on the podcast that I was going to try. I tried the cryotherapy tank.
Okay.
Cryogenic freeze tank.
All right. So how cold does it get in there?
Negative 250 degrees.
Okay.
I don't want to misquote it. So, I think it's negative 250. So I wanted to do it. I heard people talk about it on some podcasts I listen to, and I've heard things about it. That's supposed to be very good for inflammation, and plus I just wanted to try it. I'm kind of like, that's kind of what I do. It's just like I like to, I don't know, find something and try it. And
so I guess off the bat, like, how much did this cost?
So I bought 2 sessions for $60.
Okay.
To try it out.
Just for yourself, you and Alex?
No, but I'm watching Alex right now blow kisses to the dog as if he's blowing him back.
Hello, Alex.
Is he blowing him back?
Yeah.
But
I caught it.
Okay, so I've been seeing this place next to the gym I go to. Mm-hmm. It's called the Below Body Bar. And it's very good for inflammation, and I've been having a kind of a nagging knee injury and a nagging back thing, which I swear to God I hurt carrying that gigantic stage I used to have up the stairs at Tap House, like the big wooden platform.
Yeah.
I swear to God it's from that, and it probably is. You remember how heavy that thing was.
Yeah.
And I was doing it. But anyway, so I wanted to try it. Why the hell not? And so I go there, and right away I noticed that there's like 4 nurses, or maybe technicians, whatever you want to call them, people that do the stuff. And the woman, they're all super friendly, all talking to me like, hey, well, how'd you hear about us? Blah, 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 blah. You could tell they're new business. Like, how'd you hear about us? Oh, cool. Like, are you nervous? Blah, blah. And they take my blood pressure, and my blood pressure, now I know I have like somewhat a little higher blood pressure. My parents have it. Like, it's just kind
of I take pills for that.
So I take it, and they're like, oh, your blood pressure, whoa, it's like crazy. It was like 180 over like 130. I'm like, okay, that's not right. There's no way that's right. I'd be dead right now. But anyway, so I'm like, they're like, are you nervous? I'm like, not really. I said, I'm kind of curious. I'm like, kind of excited. The blood pressure has nothing to do with it, but it was just kind of weird. I'm like, I've never heard numbers that high.
Mine was pretty high where I realized I had to go on pills, and I was something like 220 over 80. It was insane.
The first number, like they say, it doesn't matter that much, but yeah, that's pretty high.
Yeah, I mean, because I was trying to get blood that day, and they literally said, "How stressed out are you?" I'm like, I still had the first job, so I'm like, I'm pretty damn stressed, right. But I didn't feel like at that moment. I'm like, this is like a sea level stress day, you know. It's like, I'm not the greatest, but I'm not trying to kill myself. So So I should be able to get blood today.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if I eventually have to take something just to lower it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I think my mom does. But anyway, so that's not the point. So I go in and I'm like, wow, there's a lot of like women talking to me here. I'm like kind of overwhelmed. I'm like, all right, like I kind of want to just like do it. You know what I mean? Like get in. And so I get in and they're like, okay, well, you got to go put on this robe. And they asked me what size shoe I was and stuff like that, right?
Because
you got to put on like clogs and like socks, like to kind of cover your extremities, basically.
Okay.
But I see a pair of shoes on the ground that are like size 9s. I'm like, they're like New Balance shoes. I'm like,
mm-hmm.
I'm like, does she think I'm fitting in these? And they look like someone's shoes. I'm like, I'm like, no. And then like I'm changing everything else, like putting on the robe. Like you don't go naked. You go in your underwear.
Yeah.
And she's like, you know, like knocking on the door, like, you ready? I'm like, no, I don't know what to do with the shoes. I can't fit. And she's like, she comes in, she's like, oh, that was a blah, blah, blah shoe. So there, it was somebody else's shoes.
It'd be
so
great like, if you put on somebody's shoes and they're punching you while you're in the cryo tank. And all, this experience is horrible.
So I didn't put those shoes on. So I put everything on, and there's a woman there taking pictures for like their website. And, like, taking pictures of them. And she's like, do you mind if we, like, take pictures of you? I'm like, no, I guess not.
This is how so many Playboy photographs start with. Ah, you don't mind if I take a couple pictures, no?
Listen,
yeah, loosen up.
Nobody's trying to get me for Playboy, buddy. Nobody's trying to get me in a magazine. But she's, like, trying to... You know, at first I'm thinking, I'm like, I don't want pictures of me, like, in my underwear. But I'm like, you know, you can take pictures, like, of me. Because you're not in, like, you're not in covered head to toe. Your head's sticking out of the top.
Mm-hmm.
So she's like, okay, get in. And they give you oven mitts, basically, to put on your hands. Kind of like oven mitts. And they're like, give them the robe. And it's cold. It's definitely cold. Now, I've always been very good with cold. Like, yeah. I'm okay. Because I've done the polar plunge things. I always try to keep the house 67, 68. I walk around barefoot all the time. I'm short. When I was in high school, I wore shorts, like, all through the year, like a weirdo. But I've always been good with cold. And, like, they're doing it. So there's one nurse talking to me, like, telling me what's happening with my body. Like, your red blood cells are pooling to the center of your body. They're going to send, you know. And another nurse, like, sitting there. And another. So there's, like, four people looking at me while I'm doing this. Mm-hmm. And the whole time she's talking about me, and I'm thinking she's prepping me for what's going to happen. And I'm cold. I'm standing there. And then, like, I'm like, okay, I'm ready. And then as I said I'm ready, they're like, oh, you're done. I'm like, wait, what? It started? Like, right. So I was in it the whole time, and it didn't really bother me. Now, you know, I get clothes, pay my fee. And I got to tell you, I felt pretty good after. Very, like, relaxed. Like,
okay.
Like, my body, I know people, I've read people, like, they're warming up for, like, an hour or two afterwards. I didn't feel any of that. Like, I put my clothes on and got outside and was like, all right.
I mean, do you feel looser? Can you stretch more?
I felt like, you know, like, if, I don't know, like, say you go on a hike for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And that feeling you get when you get home, like when you sit and relax, like you put work in somehow, but like your body feels good, like
yeah,
like kind of like you worked out, kind of almost. But and they do say you burn like 800 calories in like 3 minutes, like because wow. your body's trying to warm itself up. Whatever, I wasn't really going for the calories. I was trying to get to see if my knee would feel better and my back would feel better.
So all you anorexics out there, keep eating and lock yourself in the freezer every night. You'll be skinny in no time.
Advice from Berlin. So I felt good. I got to tell you, I felt good the next day. And then today I felt really good. Like, I don't know, today and yesterday. Like, I felt, like I don't know, like a little bounce in my stomach. They say you'll feel, like if you go consistently, you'll feel, start getting used to. Like, I did feel like a little lightheaded, though, like when I got out. Like, woo. Like,
oh, okay.
But I'm going to go for the second session probably tomorrow, and I'll kind of report back on that. But so far, so good.
All right.
On the cryogenic tank. It was interesting, though, for sure. And, like, I tell people, they're like, what? What? Like, what are you doing? I'm like, you know, just trying something different, you know.
You should experiment. You should just go outside and oven mitts and sneakers.
Somebody else's sneakers.
Yeah. It's not as relaxing as the other time. A lot more neighbors staring at me than the four nurses.
They said it's like an hour in the ice bath in 3 minutes. Hmm. Like it's supposed to be the equivalent of what it does to your body.
You figure more NFL teams would do that versus
ice bath. Well, it's funny you say that because they have like a lot of, they're advertising towards a lot of like the high school sports teams to come in and like they'll treat their teams and stuff like that.
They should sponsor the podcast.
Well, I already thought about this.
You gave me the, yeah, I know I started it already. Don't put it on a curse.
So that was
cool. The Rockets red glare.
And so then Saturday, another thing I've been talking about,
mm-hmm.
I think it's because I listen to a lot of like Joe Rogan and like a couple outdoor podcasts. They're always talking about shooting bow and arrows. And I think it's gotten to my subconscious that I've wanted. I shot a couple hours when I was in Boy Scouts back in the day, and I remember liking it. But I just like, you know, let's go try it. And there's like an archery place in Hackensack. It's great. It was only $25 for a half hour. For an hour. That included the rental and the arrows and everything.
All right.
And so me and Alex went, and it's an awesome time. Now, shooting a bow is not easy. Shooting an arrow is easy. Shooting an arrow correctly and accurately is very hard. Very hard.
I know.
Your victims?
No. When I was younger, our old place in South Brunswick, my dad had like huge pieces of styrofoam, and we would practice archery all the time. And awesome. I took an archery class in college.
Nice.
That was, I think I told it on the podcast, where I was going to get a 4.0 for a semester. Yeah.
You were starting to write a joke about that.
Yeah, and I got a B minus in archery because I didn't know where when the final was, and I showed up on the wrong day, and then I took the final over the phone, and then the professor was being like a total dick through the whole thing.
I guess you just missed the target.
Oh, I see what you did there. Scott, I'm not sure you know this, but that was a joke.
Well, anyway, I found it very relaxing. Like, it just mm-hmm. just fun to shoot, and the place was great. And the last, like, your last, like, 5 minutes, they put a balloon on the, like, in the bullseye. And if you hit it, you get, like, a free session.
Ooh.
Like, and so Alex hit one before. It wasn't supposed to be there. It just blasted one. Like, all her other arrows are all over the place.
She's supposed to be the guy 3-2 sits down.
She looks at the balloon, just blast it. Like, all her arrows are like mine, like, kind of all scattered. You're trying to learn how to shoot. And then the balloon goes up. She's like, pow! Like, just blast it. And then the last 5 minutes again, they put the balloon up. She's like, well, I hope I hit the balloon. First freaking shot, boom, hits the balloon. I'm like, what the hell? And then, of course, like, my man instinct tries to kick in. I'm like, well, I got to hit the balloon, too. And
I'm going to hunt me some balloons.
And I completely missed the balloon.
Mm-hmm.
But it was something I could definitely see myself getting into. And I enjoyed it. I think I'm going to continue to do it a little bit.
You know, it's a good exercise, they say, when you get like a, I'm not sure what kind of pressure bow you're using. They say like how they train some of the English archmen was you basically aim at a target and you hold it for 1 minute.
Right.
Your nerves will be going after about 15 seconds in. You're like, oh my God.
Yeah. It was like your traditional wooden type bow. It's not like a compound bow, nothing fancy. But it was, it was definitely cool, man. It's something I could see, like, I got an hour to kill on a Saturday, like, go drive and do it, you know. But, yeah.
Very.
So we've been working kind of closely with I guess you can call them Ray B. Inc.
Okay.
They've been sending us a lot of guests, Lucky Chops and Lewis Watson, and we got a couple more coming down the road, a couple names, too, that you guys might know. Now, I'll be honest, I did not know this guy that we're going to interview in just a second. His name is Christopher Duncan. He goes by the name of C. Duncan. He's actually from Scotland. I don't think we've ever had someone from Scotland.
Trying to think. You do the Conor McGregor imitation. That's about as close as we get.
Yeah, that great imitation that I do that everyone's like, do it again, yeah. Scott, do it again.
Any chance he's related to Tim?
Or donuts? No. My grandfather's name is Duncan. That was his first name.
Hmm.
Yeah.
That's an old school name.
It's a Scottish name, yeah. So they sent me this guy. I listened to some of his music, very chill, kind of trippy type music. It's pretty good. So I'm going to give him a call. We're going to get a little bit of invitation, a little bit of insight
into kind of what he does, and it's kind of starting to blow up a little bit. So his name is C. Duncan.
Hello.
Hey, is this Chris?
It is, yes. Yes, this is Scott.
Chris, this is Scott, and this is my cohort Mike here.
How's it going, Chris?
How's it going?
Chris, where are we calling? Where are you calling us from? Are you in Scotland now? Are you in stateside? Where are you?
So we are in Auckland at the moment.
California?
Yeah.
Oh, all right. Uh-oh. So it's early.
It's fairly early. It's like 5:30.
Yeah.
Yep.
So Chris, we got in contact. We've been talking to a couple people through Ratebee and whatnot. And I was saying just before this, I'll be honest, like I'd never heard of you before, but I was sent you and said they said, oh, he'd be a really good guest, that you should check out his music. And I've been checking out the music in the last week, kind of preparing for the interview. Very interesting stuff, man. Very like I find myself like spacing out to it, and very mellow, and a lot of different. I'm noticing a lot of different instruments every time I listen to it. Are you?
Yeah.
Is it just you making the music? I know you tour with the band, but is it just you recording all the instruments and whatnot, or are you guys a full ensemble there?
No, it's just me. So it's just me in my apartment in Glasgow, kind of playing around with lots of different sounds.
Mm-hmm. So are you like a classically trained musician? Are you from your musician from when you were a child? Or
yes. So both my parents are classical musicians. And then I went and studied classical composition at university. So it all just kind of stems from there, really.
What's your like instrument of choice? Are you a piano player, guitar player mainly, or
it's kind of changed recently. So it was guitar. It was piano to begin with when I was very young, and then I became a teenager and wanted to play guitar. And now it's kind of gone back to obviously it's kind of guitar and keys, I guess.
Now, were your parents supportive when you say you want to play guitar? Are they one of those? And oh, you study Bach like we did.
No, they were quite into it. I think it was just it was something different for them as well. They were well up for me learning guitar and bass and all that kind of stuff.
So, Chris, you're a young dude. You're 28.
Yep.
When did you start to kind of go into the direction that we hear on some of your solo record, like the records you put out recently? Has it always been that? I mean, obviously every musician branches into different styles and whatnot, but you have a general sound overall. How long have you been really kind of focusing on that sound you're going for now?
So probably about I started when I was at university. That's when I started doing this sort of thing. But I only started taking it seriously maybe 5 years ago, and that's when I started trying to kind of shape my sound, I guess.
Now, be honest, what kind of crappy bands were you in beforehand? Everyone's been in. Were you in a ska band? Were you in a?
I was in death metal bands.
Yes,
all that sort of thing. So I was a big death and doom metal fan when I was a lot younger.
You were the guitarist,
and then. Guitarist and bassist, yeah.
So you weren't the growler or the screamer.
Yeah. So that was pretty fun. And then I just became a bit more refined as I got older.
What kind of music scene do we got in Scotland? Like, here in America, our first thought, like, when we hear good classic music, and we're not... I can't say off the top of my head, Scotland's the first place I choose on where it comes from. What's it like down there?
It's great, yeah. So Glasgow particularly, it's a very eclectic place. So there's lots of different music going on. There's not really a Glasgow sound anymore, which I think, for the better. It's kind of lost that grittiness that it used to have.
Mm-hmm.
And it just kind of allows people to basically do what they want. And because it's a small city as well, everyone, if you're a musician, about 100 other musicians. So there's this sort of huge network of people who all know each other, who all party together, but all kind of doing different stuff. So you kind of, it's just a great place to be influenced by, friends making their own music.
Now, were you ever the guy, that played on the streets or did any kind of like street music, or were you kind of always more of a studio musician that transferred it to a live show?
Yes, I always was just a studio musician who kind of didn't play live unless he had to.
No.
which of course has changed now. You know, I love playing live, but yeah, my main thing was really locking myself away in my studio for weeks at a time and just
Did you find that transition hard? Like, I know, like, I've made stupid, silly songs on the computer, and all of a sudden they have 29 different tracks and sound effects and things that I'm like, oh boy, like if I ever had to do this live, I need 13 guys and like various sound crews to pull this off. Did you find that transition hard?
It was very hard to begin with. Again, because I'd never really performed, I had that to sort of overcome first of all. But then, there are a lot of layers in both albums, which, I didn't know how to do it at first. So I thought I'll get one other person involved and the two of us would just play around with electronics and a few instruments and see what happens. And it was fine. And then we got another person involved and just kind of grew the band until there's now four of us. I think because of the people I'm working with, they're all very aware of how I make my music and what's important in it. So whenever they listen to it, they tend to pick up on the bits that I really want, to be heard live, I guess. They're all very in tune with it. So that helps a lot. But then, of course, for this American support tour, I've gone back to the beginning and I'm doing it solo, which is also very fun. But I think, obviously there's parts missing to the sort of overall sound, but we've sort of come up with a sort of middle ground.
How did you get started on your way to your professional career? Were you like a YouTuber? Did you play around with different stuff and just got together with your record company? How did it all occur?
So I basically, whenever I started recording the stuff for the first album, I kind of thought of my two favorite record labels, which were Fat Cat Records and One Little Indian. And I thought, okay, I'm going to send it to just those two and just to see what they say and, hopefully get some feedback. And I got an email back maybe about a month later from Fat Cat saying that, they really liked the demo and they're going to put it on their demo website because they use SoundCloud for all their demos. And then it was, it just went from there and, it was played on radio and then they said, okay, well, can you send us some more? So I did. And then they said, yeah, we want you to make albums with us. So it was surprisingly easy. I think it was kind of one of those right time, right place kind of things.
Now, when you're here in the United States now, you're in California. Now, when you go from, Scotland, and now you said you're coming here solo. We talked to Lewis Watson a couple weeks ago, and he was doing kind of a similar thing. He was kind of doing a solo tour in the U.S., opening for different people. How many people are you traveling with? And is it kind of a lonely experience? Is it just you and a guitar and some pedals? Or do you have like some buddies that you're with?
So I'm with my sound guy, kind of front of house, who's also one of my best friends. Mm-hmm. So that's a lot of fun. So, yeah, so the two of us are kind of driving around together and... Yeah, no, it's not too lonely. It's good having a companion. And then I've just got lots of synthesizers and laptop stuff and various things, which is fun. But also being part of a kind of support tour where you get to know all the people you're supporting, the band. So we're with Elbow, and their whole crew, and we see them every day, and we all kind of hang out together. So it's really nice.
Are you running into any audiences that know you here? Or are you pretty much flying unknown and trying to grow yourself right now?
Basically trying to grow ourselves right now because it's first time here.
Yeah, yeah. How do you like it?
It's great. Yeah, absolutely love it. And the audiences are very, very nice as well. I wasn't sure what to expect because, everywhere you go, it's, people respond to bands differently, but American audiences are great. I'm just very supportive, so yeah, it's having a great time.
That being in America, what's the best thing in the U.S. and what's the worst thing about the U.S. right now?
So, the worst thing, you probably, I don't really need to say, you probably know. And best thing, probably the scenery. It's a really beautiful time of year to be,
yes,
to be out in the States. You know, we drove, you know, up and down the East, and now we're going, you know, down the West Coast, and it's just, the colors are amazing, and, you know, the landscape across here is amazing as well. So, yeah, I'm really, really enjoying seeing that.
See, we thought you were going to say the best thing was Trump. Well, that's what, you know.
Yeah. you guys don't like him? What?
Wait, you don't like this man?
Huh?
No.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's in Asia for another week, so you can say whatever you want. When he gets back, then you got to get packing.
Yeah, you got to find it.
we actually arrived at his house in Washington the day after he left, so it was good timing.
Oh, good. Good timing.
Yeah.
That's like our, like, oops, don't mind that. Don't mind the man behind the curtain. Like, we ignore him, too. So
yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah, good.
But let me ask you something about, like, lyrically.
Yep.
So you're playing, it's always hard to, like, label things, but you're playing, like, mm-hmm. a very, I get a lot of, like, dreamy, kind of, like, trippy, cloudy kind of vibes in your music. Yeah. So sometimes the lyrics, it's almost, they kind of blend into the scenery, if you will. They blend into the audio and whatnot. They kind of become one. I'm sure you have multiple different influences or whatnot, but what are you really, like, singing about? Are you political guy? Are you just, you singing about personal experiences, or are you kind of somewhere in between?
I'm sort of somewhere in between. I mean, it kind of changes from song to song. At the moment, I'm kind of going slightly more, not political as such, but more current affairs. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, certainly with a lot of the first record, I'm really influenced by the Cocteau Twins.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, her lyrics don't mean anything to the listener, but they fit the music really well, and you make up your own words to it. So I wanted to try that just with parts of the first record, to kind of make up words that kind of, and you know, with the occasional real word that would kind of conjure an image as opposed to a meaning. So I kind of played around with that a lot in the first album. Then the second album is quite a personal one. Again, it's got some parts that you can't quite understand what they are, but there is kind of, you know, everything in that record does mean something. But I guess it was just one of those things as well, because I'm not a writer, and I'm still kind of, you know, everyone has to get better at stuff. So lyrics was always my kind of bit that I was a bit embarrassed about. So I think that also in the first record, I thought, okay, well, my way around that is to do this sort of
use all of Trump's tweets in your next album.
Yeah,
yeah, I could do. Yeah, make.
I am huge. You like that, Scott?
But just,
that's on my next album.
But just like blend it in so like you really can't pick up on it. That would be brilliant, by the way.
Wow, yeah, bunch of Republicans went to Scotland somehow. Wow, that's weird.
I know, his tweets are already abstract enough. You could probably get away with it.
All right.
With all the different training and discovering your voice, what have you found that you love bringing in from, like, your classical training and stuff that you kind of found on your way to discovering your voice?
Probably my sort of choral, my love of choral music, because obviously my music is, like, heavily layered when it comes to the voice. And that's something I used to love doing. You know, I used to love writing choral music, just because I just love the sound of loads of voices together.
Right.
So that was, yeah, that's probably the bit I get most pleasure from when recording, is that sort of taking that part from my classical background.
Right.
And putting it into, to what I do now.
Now, let me ask you something. So you're an up-and-coming musician. You got on a record label. I like to ask this question to a lot of musicians. Like, we've had established musicians on and young people and different types of bands. With the internet and social media and how easy is it to connect with fans. You obviously, that is a great advantage because you cut out the middleman in a lot of cases. But also on the opposite side of that is with streaming and everything, as far as making money off of actual album sales and whatnot, it tends to hurt you there, but yet people can obviously listen to your music, which is wonderful. How do you feel, like, where do you feel you're at with that? Do you find it like an amazing tool for yourself? Do you wish it could change a little bit? Where do you sit with that?
I think it's an amazing tool.
Yes.
So I'm from the generation after the sort of going out to the record store each weekend and spending your pocket money.
Right.
You know, I grew up in the noughties. So I guess I'm used to the whole YouTube and Napster came out.
Right.
That was a big sort of game changer for me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because I had access to lots
Napster,
and lots of stuff.
Bear Share, I remember.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah.
Kazaa.
Yeah, and, and loads of torrent websites, which I shouldn't really say, but, you know, everyone used them.
Yep.
And now, you know, with my music, I still think it's a really powerful tool. I think the good definitely outweighs the bad because, you know, making alternative music and, you know, a lot of my friends and, you know, people I know, they tend to be a different type of listener in a way. Like, I don't know, alternative music seems to attract a slightly more, not obsessive, but someone who wants to own the thing as well. So, you know, these elbow shows that we're doing in the States, because they're also slightly left field in a way.
Definitely.
All their fans want to own their, you know, they want to own their records. They don't just want the Spotify version of something.
It's good.
So although you're obviously still not selling as many albums as you maybe would 20 years ago, you still have, you know, you have this much wider reach, which, you know, like people can listen to my music in somewhere like Lima or, I don't know, in Buenos Aires or anywhere in New Zealand. And
it's amazing.
You know, mm-hmm. Yeah. And you don't have to export it. You know, it's just all there. It's just online. So.
Well, I think about like just us, like this little radio show we do here. It started me talking into a computer with no microphone, like just talking into the computer microphone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it suddenly spiraled into, we just talked to some like my idols in music growing up and actors and artists
and sports
people that we never in a million years would have thought we'd talk about. But because of social media and just constant work and emailing and sending links and examples, it seems like we get to talk to more and more and more amazing people as it goes. So 100% in favor of that. I'd just like to hear a musician's take on that. So,
yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, I'm totally all for it.
Now, if we got your iPod right now, what kind of guilty pleasure song do you have on your... Do you have any, like, Spice Girls or something like that?
I don't have Spice Girls.
Liar.
I keep saying
liar.
Well, I mean, I've got them on CD, of course. But who doesn't? Probably. I don't really know if they're guilty pleasures, just because they're so good. But ABBA and the Carpenters are two of my all-time favorites. But I know they're a bit cheesy for some.
I can get behind the Carpenters. I can get behind the ABBA. You know, might have to have a couple beers, and then I'll sing "Dancing Queen." So, Chris, if people, like, first off, what are you working on now? Obviously, you got the tour going on, but if people want to go check out your music, say hello to you, see what's going on, where can they go?
Well, you can find me on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and all that sort of thing. And hopefully, at some point over the next year or so, I'll be coming back out to the States because, you know, I've got a year-long visa, so I might as well use it.
Yeah.
Hopefully be doing some more touring.
That's awesome, man. Chris, thanks so much for coming on. And honestly, good luck with what you got going on. I'm glad that I was able to connect with you. And like I said, I've been digging a couple of the songs for sure. So good luck, man.
Great. Thank you very much.
Pleasure talking to you, man.
All right. So, see Duncan, Arlette. Arlette going up there with one of my favorite guests.
Yeah. I didn't appreciate her tone, though. You know, you know, when you come onto a show, you respect the host, and I didn't feel that
it's
she
like
did
eating
that.
In your home.
Yeah, yeah. I cook you a meal. You know, you thank me, and you offer to do the dishes. I mean, even though if I am a jerk, you just accept it, and all you say, "Thank you, sir. Can I have more?"
Offer to do the dishes. All yeah. right. Very strict in the burger mm-hmm. house, but you lay the law down, I guess.
I don't want to take out the garbage. You came over for Christmas Eve. You will do it now.
It cuts to you like alone in your apartment washing the dishes by yourself, crying. Like, well, I didn't
no
take
good son of a.
So I was thinking that the New Year is here, going to be here before we know it.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's going to come next year.
You're right. You're good.
Thank you.
You're good. So we got a couple weeks before the New Year. Now, one of the things we tried in the past was the Shenanigans Showdown.
Yeah.
We
did the year long. It didn't really work out that well. We had some plans to bring it back.
So that's what I wanted to talk about. I figure it's easier to talk to on the cast, because then maybe we can, if someone who listens can give us some feedback and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So what we tried last time was 30 challenges, something like that, whatever. Mm-hmm. And you got certain points for whatnot. It turned out to be a lot harder for me. Like, I found it like I forgot a lot of times to do things, and I would be like, yeah, I'm going to do that, and then something would pop up, and then mm-hmm. we'd do the show, and we'd forget to talk about something that happened, or, you know, like, I felt like we kind of, it got lost.
Yeah.
A year long was tough.
Mm-hmm.
So I was thinking about ways to maybe redo this or rebrand it. Now, one of the things we talked about was maybe just making it in March, like a March Madness kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
What I was thinking was more of, okay, so kind of like a lifestyle thing, right?
Okay.
So each thing is for a month. Okay. Now, however we decide to pick it or whatnot, we'll figure that out. But let's say, so I've been inspired by some podcasts lately, and I was actually thinking about this before. But let's say we, January, okay. Maybe we picked out of a hat, right? And we each put it maybe 12 things, like, for each month. So okay. It's like a lifestyle thing you have to do. So say maybe the month was go vegan for a month, right?
Interesting.
Right. No, bear with me here. So they said it's 31 days in a month. Now, you cannot go vegan for, like, say there's a couple of days you want to eat meat.
Yeah.
Right. So say 25 out of the 31 days you went vegan.
Intriguing.
Right. Mm-hmm. So you get 25 points for the month.
Gotcha.
Okay. Everything kind of being documented along the way, and everything based on the true honor system.
I hear
you. You know what I mean? Yeah. So maybe we each suggest these lifestyle things. And honestly, like, some of it could be like more like health things. Like, you know, like, you got to do
run a 5 mile.
Yeah,
five.
Yeah, yeah. Or you got to run a mile a day for a month straight. Mm-hmm. And then, hey, you didn't do it, but you lost that point for the day.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's an accumulative score. And some things may be like more achievable than what we tried in the past. Like, some of them it got crazy. And it before you know it, it would take up a lot of time to try to make some of that stuff happen.
There was no way I was going to go sell cookies door to door in a Girl Scout.
I even tried to get my thing to marry people, but then I had to go find somebody to get married. All of a sudden I'm working, you know, like, no. which I still want to do. That might happen one day.
That would still be cool. I mean,
well, it's funny.
That's lifetime, right? No, I'm being serious.
Oh, my certificate. Yeah, I don't even know where it is. I might have to buy it again.
Yeah, that's why I was wondering if it's a lifetime thing or it's you can marry people for 1 year.
It's funny because we were at a barbecue over the summer. My sister was having a barbecue, and one of her friends was like, "Well, I heard you're able to marry people." I'm like, "Where were you a year ago?" And they were like kind of interested. I don't think it's going to happen, but I was like, "I'll do it for you if you want, and I'll do it seriously. I'm not going to do it as a joke."
Yeah.
But
I mean, I thought that would have been really cool if you could have pulled that off.
I know. It all comes down to time. Like, if this was our job, our only job,
mm-hmm.
we'd be crushing it, like, doing all sorts of things.
Technically, it's my only job right now.
Yes. So I was thinking more of, like, lifestyle things. It could be anything. Like, I'm thinking, like, I don't know. Like I said, those two things would be
visit visit 20 art museums or something. Well, I know that's a high note. I'm just throwing it out.
Right, but almost more of something that you can do daily, incorporate in your daily life that, like, you know, like no coffee for a month or something like that. That would be really hard for me, really hard. But it's not something where I got to go, like, go out and physically do something. I could physically not do something.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, so I don't know. I was thinking maybe that might be the structure. And then it gives us, like, content all the time, the postings, like, and then it kind of cumulatively scores. Rather than we're each doing separate things, we might be doing the same thing. Like,
yeah, the key is somewhat entertainment and keeping people posted on what we're doing. That's a key thing.
So I don't know what you think about that, but I thought maybe that might be something we can try.
I mean, I'm open to anything. I thought the competition thing was good. Like you said, it was maybe a year we were overthinking, like, yeah, we're going to be doing this all throughout the year.
Right.
And it just turned out as, like, specific moments. I mean, I started off good. Yeah. Like, literally, New Year's, I showed you my mustache and, like, 5 points ahead already.
I felt like I started good, too. I'm like, oh, I scheduled the LARPing cast. I'm like, this is going to be awesome. And then it was like, well, this is harder than I think, some of this stuff. So we could do something like that. We could just do it month by month. Like, this month, we're going to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And then the winner of the month does something, or, you know. And it gives us stuff to talk about on a weekly basis. Like, how's it going with the eating vegan for a month? Like, oh, it's awful. Like, it's got awful.
I think to add to it, I would say we need a point minimum where if you don't hit a point minimum, then you get a punishment in the next month. And maybe it's pull back some of one of our old ones. It's like, no, you're crazy. It's like, no, you're doing it.
Something. Yeah. Yeah. Something like that. So, yeah, definitely some kind of accountability type thing. It could be a lifestyle change kind of thing, something you're not used to, getting out of your comfort zone a little bit. But I think maybe it doesn't even have to be necessarily, like, funny. Like, it doesn't have to be, like, you have to do something funny. It could be doing something, like, that's just hard. That's just hard to change or hard to break a little bit.
Yeah, some of our podcasts weren't necessarily funny, but some of our best ones were just talkative items, if you will.
Well, I mean, like, the thing doesn't have to be, like, you embarrassing yourself. It's almost more of, like, you having to do something for a month straight. Like, okay, well, focus. And challenging yourself to, like, really.
Yeah. You know? Well, I mean, the discussion point, it's got to be still entertaining to our audience at the same time, and that's the key.
So I'm going to put that idea out there and I guess kind of simmer on it for a week or whatever, and then we'll kind of discuss it again next week.
I mean, I'm definitely down, but I think whatever we decide, we need at least a month's notice to kind of to make sure, all right, we're both on the same page and we're both dedicated to doing whatever we decide. You know what I mean?
So you think we need a month's notice for the competition to start?
Yeah, something like
that. That's what I was saying now, because I was thinking like a January 1st type thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I was bringing it up now, because we got a month and a half-ish.
Yeah, I'm just saying, don't come to me December 29th. All right, here it is. Boom.
Oh, like the actual what we're doing.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So it's...
Well, it's not, like, necessarily the goal, but we're on the same page. Okay, we're going to do it in January. Are we doing it in February? Take a month off in March?
I guess we can...
Just agree to the ground rules, so we're both dedicated, and it's not like the showdown where it's like, all right, we did, like, five things. Right. And
so maybe... Maybe we start with 1 month and see how the month went. And then at the end of the month, be like, well, this was good. This is bad. Nix it or keep going. We could do that. So I don't know. That's kind of what I was thinking. Like an overall score, like where, hey, like if the competition is no meat for the month and like you're out to dinner, like, yeah, you might get some, but you lost. Yeah. Like, so like I got 30, you got 25 that month.
Yeah. I still like the idea of like maybe two or three impromptu, bam, I challenge you on the spot kind of deals also.
All right. And I kind of also like the super challenge. Like, we had a couple, the like, 50-pointers. Yeah. Maybe if we had, like, three or something like that. Like, if you can get this done, like, you get a month's worth of points. So then you get 30 points, so that someone's got to do.
And I'd be down for that being, like, a year-long thing where it's like, all right, let me think. At first, you're like, oh, no, man. And then maybe come, like, June, you're like, I do X, Y, Z. I can maybe pull this off.
Yeah. So that's my thoughts. So I thought maybe there's definitely
there's definitely things to it that were I love the idea of it. I just think we have to refine it where it's actually accomplishable.
Yeah.
And something that's fun for the listeners too.
Exactly.
And something that we could figure out a way to keep up on more as far that's entertaining to look at on Facebook or Instagram too.
Mm-hmm.
Like not just numbers like 15, 10. Like what are people like? Listen, maybe we got to put more content into it or not. But you know, so that's what I'm throwing out there for today.
I'm down with that.
So we'll simmer on that for a week, and we'll discuss it again at the end of next week's podcast, and maybe we'll have something set in stone and something set to go January 1st. Something like that.
Well, the key thing is Alex is really excited about a turkey leg for some reason. That's the biggest thing.
Eat
right
only
now.
Turkey legs for a month.
Alex got 31 points. Oh my God. Where'd she find them? It's February.
But let's get out of here. Let's go.
All right.
Anything to promote?
I'm going to do two things.
No, you only get one thing. Well, don't you know the rules?
Whatever. I'm going to do what I want. I'm going to say RedCross.org because Puerto Rico's starting to get some of their power back, but they still need help organizing things down there. We still have tragedies from Houston and Florida over the hurricanes. RedCross.org for myself. Facebook.com/DABURLS721. I'm doing Tonight on the Walking Dead. I'm hoping in December, me and Izzy have been talking about it, doing a Hallmark movie review of various Christmas movies. I can't stand them, so I'm going to be very honest, and she's going to be very bubbly doing them, but we're going to be working on that to do that. So,
like a weekly thing? Or
something like that. I mean, I'm not going to do all 31 days like I did Pumpkin Spice, whatever, but it's enough to kind of talk about... Okay, what is repetition involved in these Hallmark movies? And
yeah,
I mean, I'm not a I like Christmas. I don't like the things leading up to Christmas.
Sounds good.
If you know what I mean. So
yeah, sounds good. Refine that idea too, and get it tight. And
yep,
should be cool. All right. I want to. I guess I will do two things too.
What?
Yes. So I will first promote the Verbal Shenanigans comedy show at Tap House 15.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even tell you about the one on Wednesday. I'll talk about that next week. But on 11 November, I just want to make sure I have the date right. The 30th, which is the Thursday, last Thursday of the month. Headliner Coleman Green with John Kim, James Camacho, and Brett Druck. So it's free. Make your reservations.
Hell of a lineup.
3-3's Brewing is doing the beer tasting. So it's always a fun night to come out to that. And I'm going to support my buddy, former guest on this show. He's part of your birthday roast. He brought it up.
All right.
John Trumbull.
Mm-hmm.
John Trumbull did a pretty interesting article on the Louis C.K. kind of controversy that's going on. Okay. I thought it was pretty insightful, and I thought he had a good point of view. So if you go to atomicjunkshop.com, atomicjunkshop.com, look at John Trumbull's article on Louis C.K. I thought it was pretty cool.
He's a great guy, too.
Oh, yeah, and the winner.
John Trumbull, not necessarily Louis C.K.
Oh, we get it. You love Louis C.K. You think he's a great guy. No.
Well, up and to a point.
Okay. But yeah, John's a good guy. John was the winner of Win
First. He has
the first and last Win, Burr, Lose, and Draw. Or draw.
He won the pilot.
He got an autographed headshot of you.
Mm-hmm.
That was a great night.
Yeah.
But anyway, what you can do for us, guys. The most important thing is share the podcast with your friends if you do actually enjoy it. Commenting is good. You know, interacting with us on Facebook, Instagram. Just look up Verbal Shenanigans. You're not dumb. Yeah. We're on all the necessary social media platforms.
Pretty much.
We got T-shirts. I got plans to make a new run of T-shirts coming up pretty soon. Hopefully with a new logo, actually, like an alternate logo. So tune into that. I don't know if you tune into that. I guess look.
I mean, look up our social media and find the answer.
Yes. But if you enjoyed this first episode, it's the first time listening, just go back. We have this plethora of guests that we are always like, it feels like we have all these like great baseball cards that we want to share with someone. Like, oh my, look at my collection. You know, like, look at what we've done.
These are the baseball cards you don't put in your bike spikes and all to make that funny sound. Mm-hmm. These are like classic ones you hold on to, which grew in $2 worth.
Like, I mean, it was serious when we were talking in the interview before. We talked to so many great people. I'm sure there's someone you can identify with, whether it's a musician, an artist, a blah, 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 sports person. Yeah.
Not even the famous people. Some of the people are just flat out interesting.
Some of the unknown people are the best interviews.
Yeah. Goatman.
Goatman. Go listen to the Goatman episode. That'll blow your balls apart.
John Thwaites, is it?
Jonathan Thwaites.
Yep. He lived as a goat for 1 week.
Yep. Just
go listen to Inspector Collector. I mean, the list goes on where it's not a name you would just automatically know, but when you hear the story, it's like, oh my God, this is amazing.
But with that, guys, life is funny. We'll laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back. Go subscribe. Thank you, Arlette. Thank you, C. Duncan. Good night.
Scott, is she doing the national anthem tonight? I'm going to run down to Newark.
you run down to Newark,
I'm going to haze her.
Challenge one, run down to Newark.